Have you ever received bad news? I'm sure at some point we've all received bad news. We don't like to receive bad news, but sometimes we do. Have you ever experienced a particularly troubling time where you've wondered if it was ever going to get better? No doubt many of us have. In the midst of trouble, we may sometimes wonder, when will it ever get better? We may ask ourselves, when will this end? Maybe you've been there and wondered, how will I be able to get through this problem? Life is full of situations and difficult circumstances that challenge our belief that a better day is coming. And when these things happen, we may hope for something better, but it may be difficult to see how it's ever going to happen. That must have been on the minds of the Israelites who listened to Micah's prophecy. Last week I set the scene for this book and explained that it's a book of judgment and a book of hope. Three times in this book, Micah speaks God's judgment over the people of Israel. He lets them know how displeased God is at the way that they've been living, their treatment of the poor and needy, the corruption of the rich and powerful, and their worship of idols and false gods. The people of Israel were about to face the consequences of their actions. Micah chapter 1 doesn't say that God was going to punish them as such, but he does remove his protection from them, which is, in a way, a form of punishment, allowing their wicked neighbours from Assyria and from Babylon to wreak destruction in Israel and take the Israelites into exile as prisoners in a foreign land. Micah spoke God's warning to the Israelites that this trouble was coming and that there was no way they were going to be able to escape from it. They were about to reap what they'd sown, and it wasn't going to be pleasant. Once this terrible judgment had happened, you might imagine that the Israelites were wondering if they had any hope at all, any opportunity or way of avoiding this punishment that they were going to face. Would there ever be a better day in their future? If I could have the PowerPoint, Derek. As we understand the context of this book, we can't help but look at the world around us today. How would God view our lifestyles? How good are we at caring for the poor and the oppressed and those in need? Do our world leaders lead with integrity and justice and mercy and humility? How many idols and false gods are set up as objects of worship in place of the one true God? I suspect Micah's prophetic words would be fairly accurate if he was to summarize God's judgment over the world today as well. And it wouldn't be too much of a stretch to suggest that as Christians we live in a similar context to the Israelites, as strangers in a foreign land, exiles in a culture that really doesn't recognize and understand and accept the beliefs of our Christian faith. As we look at the issues of our world and the marginalization of the church in the West and the persecution of Christians in many other parts of the world, we would be forgiven for wondering where hope is going to come from. Will there ever be a better day in our future? Is there any hope of God redeeming and restoring the broken situation of today's world? Thankfully, today's reading from Micah chapter 2 suggests that there is hope. In the midst of the trouble and judgment, Micah announces a new promise, that God wouldn't leave his people in exile, but restoration would follow this time of destruction that they were going to face. God was going to allow them to face a time of punishment, but he was also going to save them, and hope was on its way. The first main section of this book, having mostly been so far about judgment, and last week we thought a bit about Micah's lament and his sadness at what was going on, ends with two verses of hope. It talks about a shepherd of Israel who's going to gather his sheep and lead them out as their king. These two short verses give us real hope that God has a better future planned out for the world. And there are three messages of hope in these verses that I want to look at this morning, and I want to follow this with a question. And so the three messages of hope is that God will gather his people together, God will send a king to lead his people, and God's people will follow their king to victory. And the question is, who is this king that they're following? Before we look more closely at these messages of hope, I want to play a video clip of someone who you might class as a modern-day prophet, or a slightly more modern-day prophet, who also spoke a message of judgment and a message of hope to an entire nation. And Derek's going to get this. Hopefully we won't have any more technical difficulties.
Even though we face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. That one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream.
Martin Luther King Jr. recognized the injustices of his day. He saw how people were being mistreated and persecuted unfairly because of the color of their skin. And like Micah, he spoke out, casting judgment on a world of inequality, and particularly upon the nation of America. Through non-violent action, he spoke not only judgment, but he spoke the hope of a better future as well. And that was no more clear than in this speech, that the I Have a Dream speech, where he presented a possible future that he saw was likely, but actually he didn't see become a reality in his lifetime, and that hasn't yet become fully a reality, but he presented the hope of a better world. Martin Luther King Jr. wasn't perfect, but in many ways he could be described a bit as a modern-day Micah, a prophet who spoke judgment over the situation of today, but also the hope of a better future that was going to come. And so in today's passage, the first message of hope that I want to draw out, and I'm going to refer back to that Martin Luther King video as well, is that God will gather his people together. Having clearly spoken God's judgment over the people and explained that they were going to find themselves in exile because of their destructive ways, Micah begins his message of hope with this promise that he would gather his people together. He says it three times in this verse. I will surely gather all of you, Jacob. I will surely bring together the remnant of Israel. I will bring them together like sheep in a pen, like a flock in its pasture, and the place will throng with people. Micah starts his message of hope with this promise for a good reason. One of the most painful aspects of this exile they were going to face would be the breaking up of communities and families. A few weeks ago, it was Holocaust Memorial Day, and on the news, I watched an interview with a woman who was taken from her home, who was separated from her family and was put on a train to Auschwitz, where she was imprisoned for 2 years. And during this time, she never knew what had happened to her family. She didn't know whether she would survive, and she didn't know whether her family and friends would survive and whether she would see them again. Well, she did survive. Sadly, some of her family and friends didn't. But actually, eventually, she was reunited with other survivors, with some of her family members, who, like her, had survived this horrendous time of exile. And this perhaps gives some insight into the situation of the Israelites as they were taken from their home in Israel and transported into exile in Babylon, separated from their families and their friends and their communities. And so this repeated message that God gives in this passage, that he will gather them together like a shepherd gathers his sheep in a pen, would have brought them a lot of hope that they would one day join together again as brothers and sisters, united with each other and with God. And we can also draw upon a similar message in that Martin Luther King speech. That clip that we watched started off with Martin Luther King talking about the difficulties of today and tomorrow before he launched into a speech that was full of hope, that talks about slaves and slave owners living together in harmony, little black children and little white children being free to play together. He paints a picture of unity and togetherness, a world where people aren't divided and separated by difference and injustice, but living together in harmony. These pictures of unity painted by Micah and by many other prophets throughout history paint a picture of what the kingdom of God is like. This is summarized well in Psalm 133, verse 1, which says how good and pleasant it is when God's people live together in unity. We live in a world today where people are still divided, whether that's by race or by wealth or by political views, even within families. And I'm sure there are many other issues like these as well. Like Martin Luther King, as followers of Jesus, we have a clear message of unity to bring, that God's desire for his people is that we live together in unity, and that we remember that like a shepherd, God is always gathering us into his fold, seeking and searching after each one of us. Even when he has gathered 99 of 100 sheep, he still goes searching for the one lost sheep. And we should be seeking to bring a similar kind of unity and togetherness. This verse does say that God will gather a remnant of his people. And this is recognition that in this time of exile, not everyone who went into the exile would return. The exile lasted 70 years, and many of them who were taken into exile would have actually died during this time. Some would have married and settled down and may have not returned for that reason. There may have been other reasons as well. But God promises to restore and redeem those who are left, the ancestors of those who were carried into exile, that through this remnant, the land of Israel would once again throng with people, the passage said. And so God gives this promise that he will gather his people together and the exile would not be the end. Having spoken this message of hope, Micah then prophesies in verse 13 about how this gathering together is going to happen and who was going to lead the people. It was never going to be easy for the Israelites to escape captivity, to travel hundreds of miles back to their land and rebuild an entire nation. It almost seemed like an impossible and hopeless task. If this was ever going to be possible, they would need a good leader to get them there. Micah tells them that God will appoint a person to be the people's king who passes on before them. This king would lead them out of captivity. He would open the way and lead God's people out of the lands where they have been scattered. In some versions of the Bible and in some books and commentaries, the king in this passage is also called the breaker, because of this verse that says, the one who breaks open the way will go before them. They will break through the gate and go out. God was going to send a king who would bring breakthrough for his people. God had judged them and allowed this exile to happen as a form of punishment. But it was also God who was going to provide this king who would guide them to freedom and lead his people to salvation. There are many people in our world today who are forced to leave their homes for one reason or another, and are made to live in a different country for one reason or another. Imagine for a moment that you are one of those people. Picture the journey that you might have been on, and the struggles that you might have had along the way. Think about what it would be like to live in a completely foreign and alien culture. And consider how you might be treated by others as you settle in a land that isn't your own. This was the reality that the Israelites faced. But it's also the reality faced by many people around the world today. For the Israelites, this destruction was caused by their own sin. But it was also down to their fierce enemies from Assyria and Babylon. Many people fleeing their homes today are doing so due to no fault of their own, but because of civil war or persecution. In the passage, the Israelites are promised a king who would bring breakthrough and would guide them out of captivity and into freedom. That's God's promise of salvation for his people. That was their hope. So what hope do we have today? Who will be the king for us? Who will lead us into breakthrough? Who is the king of the refugee and the asylum seeker? Who will lead us into freedom? We're going to explore this a bit more as we ask the question, who is the king at the end? But may I suggest, as we move into our final message of hope, that we all have a responsibility to help each other on the journey that this king is going to lead us on. Micah tells the Israelites that God would send a king who would break through the city walls and would lead them to freedom. But we also read that the Israelites had to follow the king out of the city and back to their homeland. And this wouldn't have been an easy journey. They would have been a bit scared of what might happen to them as they left the city where they've been held captive for so long. They were going to have to trust in God and trust in the king who was leading them. And they'd have to trust in each other as well, if their freedom was going to be fully recognized. If we're to fully recognize God's vision of a better future for our world today, we need to be willing to follow the king. And this might involve taking the first steps in standing up for a cause, in fighting injustice, or in providing radical hospitality to those who were in need. I've just talked about those who are forced to leave their homes as refugees. In following the king, may I suggest that our role is to walk with each other into freedom by getting alongside those who have found themselves in a situation that's similar to the exile situation that the Israelites find themselves in this story. So while God's people were sent into exile for not following God, Micah prophesied that the nation would be saved. They would follow their king out of captivity and into victory. Sometimes the path to victory is through hardship and trouble. Sometimes in order to get where we should be, we have to go through a challenging experience. And that was true for the Israelites as they followed their king. Whilst their nation was going to be destroyed and the people scattered, God was also going to gather them together and give them a king. They would pass through the gate of captivity and enter into victory and freedom, but through trouble and hardship. It was through trouble and hardship that God's people would see a better day. If we look back to that video of the life of Martin Luther King, just a few days after that famous I Have a Dream speech that we watched, Martin Luther King was killed. His fight for equality and freedom cost him his life. Whilst we still live in a world where there's racism and inequality, through the sacrifice of people like Martin Luther King, the world is a better place in which far more people live together in peace and unity. Through trouble and hardship, God's people will see a better day. And so we must follow the King, walking what might be a difficult journey through life here on earth towards the freedom and victory that were promised. So who is this king? Who will bring victory and lead the people of Israel? And who is our king? Whilst he did many great things, the answer isn't Martin Luther King. If you look at the passage that we've read historically, You can actually connect this passage up with a man called King Cyrus. Cyrus was the king of Persia and invaded Babylon. And historically, it was during his reign that the Israelites were liberated from captivity. He helped them to return to Israel and rebuild their land, despite not being an Israelite himself. And he's credited with liberating the people of Israel from exile. But like many of the other prophetic writings in the Old Testament, Micah's prophecies point to a much bigger story, not just of God saving the people of Israel through someone like King Cyrus, but God's ultimate redemption and his plan to save all of humanity and to bring restoration to the whole of the world forever. And so the shepherd king talked about by Micah, who would bring his people together, who would break through the walls of captivity and lead his people into freedom, points, as I'm sure you've already guessed, to Jesus. Jesus is our king. The clue is in the last line of the passage. It says, "Their king will pass through before them, the Lord at their head." Jesus will lead the way to freedom. Jesus will break the chains of sin and evil and death and will lead us into new life. In his life, death and resurrection, Jesus gives us the hope of eternal life with him. Whilst we still live in an imperfect world where we see injustice all around us, we hold on to God's promise that Jesus will return and that on that day he will create a new heaven and a new earth where there'll be no more death or mourning or suffering or pain. God gives us the ultimate hope of a perfect future. But following Jesus also gives us hope for today. That Jesus is at work in the world today, and he does that through us, his church, bringing peace, unity, and hope into the darkest parts of the world. His Spirit lives in us, bringing breakthrough and freedom and healing in our lives. And through both his word and his Spirit, Jesus is our King who guides us to freedom and who encourages us to bring other people along on the journey to freedom. Jesus is our King. Jesus is our hope. Jesus has and will break our chains and lead us into victory. And all that he requires of us is that we follow him. That we follow him to the land that he's promised for us. And that along the way, we do what it says later in Micah in chapter 6, verse 8, that along the way we act justly, we love mercy, and we walk humbly with our God.